This is the Popmatic Podcast for November 18th, 2015.
Mm-hmm. Happy birthday, Dad.
Happy birthday, Jeremy's dad.
Happy birthday, Jeremy's dad. Mr. Estes.
Take two.
Yeah, let's leave that up. My father and I don't speak.
This is the Popmatic Podcast for November 18th, 2015. I'm cozy. You're cozy.
I'm super cozy.
I'm cozy like a teapot.
This is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are...
Meg.
Amanda.
Bill.
Jeremy.
Today we are going to get cozy. Why cozy? For one, all year Amanda has had to listen to the man boys bloviate quote, comic books, horror movies about comic books, and or comic books about horror movies, unquote.
That's a direct quote, yes.
This sounds about right, yes.
Oh, and A Case of the Stubborns is a great episode from Tales of the Dark Side.
I was debating putting that in the corrections.
So maybe for 1 week, we could just chillax with all this violence. So just like a cozy mystery, this episode won't offend your grandma. But also... fall is the time of year when things get cozy.
I did bring my slippers today. So. Mm-hmm.
You break out the sweaters. You make some tea. You curl up by the fire. Your whole life becomes like this Cialis ad. Whoa, that's almost not cozy. You better get started.
Have you been reading my journal?
Amanda.
Yeah, it's Brian.
Can you do a cozy open?
I can. But it's funny because I've never been a fan of cozy mysteries.
Can you explain to us what cozy mysteries are?
No, because I don't, I mean, I...
I'm a good librarian. I can do that.
Okay. Ask Brian. He knows.
I know
what they are, but I don't know what the official definition is.
Is it like the muffin murders and and the real estate murders and the
White House chef mysteries?
Rita Mae Brown a cat.
And yeah,
the,
yeah.
Yeah, there's a cat who.
Well, mine fits right in.
What? So how is that a thing? How is that a thing?
Because
you're not a lady, Jeremy.
Because.
I'm a woman.
Because. A lot of people that liked mysteries liked the sort of classic age of mysteries, and they didn't like the sort of Scandinavian sex and violence mysteries.
Yeah, you know, Agatha Christie's Miss Marple Miss Marple.
It's a little... Okay.
Dorothy Sayers.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So this genre started to emerge where there were these sleuths that were not a lot of violence, or the violence was stylized in a humorous way, often with puns.
Sure. Yeah, right? that's the thing. It's like
that's the big appeal for me.
I've not really read any Agatha Christie and all these classic things, but like she's not. I mean, so she's all these other books have like seem like they came from a joke book.
No,
just the title.
There's just
still
the
a murder. That's what I mean.
Usually,
yeah.
No cussing, right? No sex that isn't PG. Right?
Behind the curtain.
Listeners can't see Bill's indignant
Bill's
face.
Figuring out why he doesn't like
what parents are guiding
people? This is good stuff. Try it in.
Oh,
so that's what cozy mysteries are. Total tangent.
Well, we needed to explain that. So I think part of the reason that I stayed away was because of the finger quotes punny titles, because they kind of are annoying. But when we were talking about this, I really wanted to try one because they're really big. Everybody reads them. They're kind of like romance books, but for the mystery folks. So luckily, my very goodest friend has read every cozy mystery ever and ever. So I asked her kind of what some of her favorites were, and she gave me a list of about 10. And so Diane Mott Davidson was one of the first ones on her list that I recognized. So I'm like, okay. Plus, you know, she writes about a caterer, and everyone else knows I like to read about food stuff. So that was kind of a double win for me. She only has one series. It's called the Goldie Schultz Culinary Mysteries, and it originated way, way back in the year of 1990.
Whoa, so, 25 years ago.
More
anniversaries for me.
Yep, it's an oldie but a goodie. So the first book in the series was called Catering to Nobody, so not quite as, finger quotes, punny as
That's
some of them.
What that put puns.
That's
half-baked.
That's describing the audience for the book.
There you go. So the most recent book, was called The Whole Enchilada, and it came out in 2013, so we're getting a little bit punnier. So right now she has 17 books that span, you know, the 25 years, so that's a lot of good food and good reading. The story follows caterer Goldie Schultz as she attempts to move forward and live independently, running her own catering business after divorcing her severely abusive husband. So in the first book, Goldie is called upon to cater the wake for her son's favorite teacher who died under mysterious circumstances. And of course, she can't say no.
About cozies is it's always like, you know, somebody they know has died, but they don't seem to like, I mean, they want to investigate the murder and all, but they don't seem to like, you know, where's like the mourning?
What's that, someone close to them?
It's yeah. Like it's always like your teacher. Best
it's like,
friend.
You can be sad. Like, oh, there was an earthquake in another country and that's too bad for them. But my life goes on.
Well, it's like the television show Heart to Heart. When we were in college, we always said, well, you didn't want to be their friends because they either wound up dead or in jail.
Oh, see, also Murder, She Wrote, and anybody who lived in that town she was in.
Oh, is that a cozy, too?
Cabot Cove.
Buffy has the same. Wow. A lot of Buffy friends get
good work,
eaten.
Jessica Fletcher. All right.
So anyway, back to the wake. Unfortunately, Goldie's ex-father-in-law is almost poisoned, and which forces Goldie's business to get shut down. And, you know, there are cops in this book. They don't really seem to be in too big of a hurry to solve anything. And so with the busy holiday season approaching, Goldie must solve the crime herself. So the thing I liked most about the cozy mystery is that it was kind of just a relaxing read. It was kind of entertaining, maybe a little predictable, usually pretty quick. Reminded me, like I said, of a good romance novel. It's not going to change my life, but it's a fun way to escape for a couple hours. The first book is actually honestly a little bit slow. I kind of was like, okay, this is all I get. So I read the second one because, like, sometimes I do that with TV shows, too. Like, the first one is so much exposition that you kind of have to get into the second episode before you get story.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
But the next one does pick up. It's called Dying for Chocolate. I'm in the third one right now called The Serial Murders. And they have gotten...
How do they spell it?
Like C-E-R-E-A.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then, in addition to the mysteries themselves, NPL also has a couple of cookbooks dedicated to recipes from Cozy Mysteries. Goldie's Kitchen cookbook is Davidson's offering. We also have a new release called The Cozy Cookbook, which is more than 100 recipes from today's best-selling mystery authors. I actually made the gourmet spinach soup from Dying for Chocolate, and it wasn't half bad. It was pretty mushroomy. I might cut the mushrooms out if I make it again.
You're the most dedicated podcaster.
That's the best part.
Yeah, really. Like, you read a book for this? You made a recipe for this?
My husband liked it. I made him eat it, too.
I feel so bad. You know, I was going to read a Friend Fisher mystery, and I didn't, I feel...
I know you should. Yeah,
I'm recommending two books I read like nearly 30 years ago.
Wow. You were five? Seriously?
Yeah, okay, fine, 25.
So if you need a mystery and a snack, this is your genre.
I think I mentioned on an earlier podcast how I really wish I could be like a hack writer. Like I can just write what – and I don't mean that as an insult. I just mean like I wish like these people who would just like – who churn out a book all the time. You know?
Like Nora Roberts does, like 14 books
yeah,
a year.
Yeah, and you know, whether or not they've got a staff under
like
them.
Like a dinosaur erotica author on Amazon.
Exactly. or like the Clippy erotica, you know, the Clippy, the Microsoft Word assistant.
There is Clippy erotica.
Look it up, my friend.
Whoa.
What
I'm saying is like,
Clippy erotica doesn't, what?
Maybe that's Jamie's version of Cozy.
There's so many things I want to say, but I can't because this is a family-friendly podcast. Okay, anyway.
So, but like, I was like thinking like, well, I was like the diet fad murders. Like you could do like the Atkins, the paleo murders, South Beach.
Yeah.
I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is like such a, it's like a factory for ideas. It's kind of amazing.
Jeremy locks himself in his house and writes them.
Exactly.
For the next year.
Yeah. So I quit.
Skinny to death.
I was going to say, after you cash in on this, remember your podcast friend.
That's right, I will.
Yeah.
Do we get a cut of royalties because we helped you come up with it?
Yes, I will. Cool. I will buy new recording
equipment.
It'd be
nice to have a nice villa paid for by the Dash Diet.
Yeah.
Well, Jeremy daydreams about his cozy future, raking in royalties for his Diet Murders series. I'm going to try to get the thought of cozy, Clippy erotica out of my mind.
It looks like you're trying to disrobe. Do you need some help with that?
No, I do not.
I can leave if you need a minute.
That
was the cleanest one I could do. Brian.
My fall fuzzy blanket, my entertainment comfort food that is safe for all ages... is Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah.
Now, I normally don't get personal on this. I usually don't get personal on this podcast, but I'm going to pull a Jeremy-esque autobiographical sketch.
I like that my name gets esque attached to it a lot.
It seemed like there was like a run where I did every episode.
Yeah.
I have awesome parents, and they loved me very much. They provided for me. They encouraged me to follow my joy and become the person I wanted to be. And I realize I'm very lucky and very blessed in this, that not everyone has that. When we do holiday episodes, we're always talking about spending time with your family. I'm always like, well, if you're lucky enough to have a family, because, you know, I've lived long enough to know that not everybody has a family, or some people's families are weird in a bad way, not weird in a good way. But one of my happiest, most coziest memories of my childhood is sitting in my living room in the wintertime watching Star Trek The Next Generation with my mother. The house was always warm, and it was always wintertime, and it was dark outside, which was cool because in the show, like, the Star Trek Enterprise is in space, and it's always dark outside the ship.
Yeah.
And remember we talked about someone posted the 24-hour loop of the Enterprise-D background noise mm-hmm. on YouTube, mm-hmm. right? Wow. Like, perfect. I love it. You're like, yeah, I know why you would do that. That's as close as I'm ever going to get back inside the womb. And that's where all the psychoanalysts say that's where we all want to be.
Okay. Good.
Speaking of psychoanalysts, my father used to always walk by the room and make fun of us for watching Star Trek, Freud. with regards to more objective measures of coziness, I think Next Generation is the show that actually lives up to the values that Star Trek is often touted for. What's the word?
Touted for.
So diversity, teamwork, a thirst for knowledge's sake, peace and justice, a vision of a more tolerant and fair universe. You know, the original Star Trek series really isn't like that. The original Star Trek series is kind of like Don Draper in space, which is sick and gross. The elephant in the Star Trek room universe. The elephant in the room of the universe of Star Trek is that Captain Kirk is a jerk. Patrick Stewart, as Captain Jean-Luc Picard, offers an alternative version of leadership. He is selfless and dedicated and mindful. He's intellectual. He cares more about archaeology than he does about dating. So every week on Next Generation, the crew goes out on a mission, and we learn how not to be jerks. And of all the shows I watched as a kid that I then went on to watch again as an adult, it's the one show that if I had kids, with the exception of a few episodes, I would want them to watch. Star Trek The Next Generation was long in the making. The show's creator, Gene Roddenberry, had planned this TV show called Star Trek Phase 2 in the 70s, and someday me and Bill are going to be alone in this booth and do a whole episode about Star Trek Phase 2. Hollywood shenanigans ensued, and there was never a Star Trek Phase 2, but all that work that went into that show eventually sort of morphed into Star Trek The Motion Picture. The theme for Star Trek The Motion Picture was composed by Jerry Goldsmith. A variation on that theme would be used 8 years later as the theme for Star Trek The Next Generation, the TV series. And when I hear that music, I am transported back, Proust style, to my most happy and cozy memory. And it's a memory that I have with my real life family. And what's funny too, like the mythology around The Next Generation, if you ever go to conventions or like you're involved with fan culture, is that for a lot of people who like didn't have families or were separated from their families, the cast on the characters on Next Generation really like became their family, and they really feel like the characters on that show were their family. I like that a lot. It's really cozy and good. Star Trek The Next Generation, I'm done being sentimental. Next month it'll all be death and war.
So you have a favorite episode?
You know, I don't have anything unusual in my favorite episode. I think the arc between the end of season 3 and the beginning of season 4, which the
is that
one
like best Locutus of both worlds or something?
Yes. That was when
Best of Both Worlds, part 1 and 2.
Yeah. So that was like some of the best genre TV ever. Yeah. I would say about Star Trek I think it's a kid's show that's good for adults. It's episodic, so they never really get into the character drama that a snooty jerk like me who tends to like. But one of the kind of stories that I like the most is the relationship between Picard and Dr. Crusher and how they had a past, and then also the very adult relationship that they have later because they kind of want to be together, but their careers keep them apart and their pathologies, keep them from being together. That arc I really enjoyed a lot.
I like Next Generation. It'd probably be my pick if I had to pick one Star Trek.
I had a Picard action figure and I drew hair and a beard on it because I was 8.
Jeremy,
have a Benjamin Sisko action figure.
It could do glower angrily action.
Dredge us out of this river of nerd.
Well, I guess I sort of can. So I took the – I not knowing what the cozy mysteries were exactly, I also thought about something that made me feel comfortable, because feeling comfortable is not something that I am or do much. I get nervous when the phone rings, or if I have to
alarm clock goes off,
if I have to wake up, or you know,
getting out of bed, brushing my teeth,
someone makes eye contact with me, or I have to tie my shoes. So I got these like mental, emotional walls sort of built up to keep me safe and to keep anxiety away. But so if I'm not able to do that in my own head, I will do that with the television, because I can become engaged with a program, but if I'm being honest, more often than not, I'm just sort of staring at the box as it flickers, and just sort of lying inert on my recliner with my eyes glazed over. And so kudos to the person who coined the term binge watch, because that's exactly what it is. It's sort of like it's like if you go to a buffet and you're like, oh, this General Tso's chicken is delicious, and then I'm just going to keep eating it until I die. Because if I start watching a couple of shows and I really get into it, I can kind of quickly turn into like a loss of productivity that would make Congress blush. Satire. So when I think of cozy,
I'm not sure that was satire. But,
you know, I'm trying to be nice this time, trying not to jump on that Jeremy Sucks bandwagon.
Yeah. Wow. There's a bandwagon?
Yeah, it's outside the door.
So when, he's been working on it for a few weeks.
So when I think of being cozy, I think of my son being asleep, myself wearing a bathrobe, and maybe there's ice cream involved. And if my wife's there too, that's fine. But sometimes she makes fun of shows with spaceships. My wife is your dad in this equation. So what?
Say it again. My wife is your dad. This is funnier
is
when you say
weird.
It.
My wife Gross. Is your dad.
I'm feeling less cozy as this brother's, time.
My brother's my sister. So what? What is there to binge watch? You know, the library has a lot to offer in the way of television shows, and the user experience for us as patrons is much better now, because we've kept sets intact and extended checkout time. So you can plow through all of Breaking Bad or Lost or Battlestar Galactica. And these are all shows that are sort of tailor-made for playing the game of just one more episode with your spouse or yourself, even if there are plot holes or questionable endings or codas which take place 100,000 years after the end of the series. but you shouldn't just restrict yourself to the current golden age of television. We've also got the trippy spy series, The Prisoner, starring Patrick McGoohan. It's only 17 episodes long. I think two of those, for me, were kind of duds. The Western, that McGoohan wasn't in.
The girl who was death was so boring. Yeah. And the Western one is kind of.
Yeah, and they're like back to back.
Yes.
Think. Yeah.
He was listing scripts. And anyway, we're going back in nerd
territory. No, it's fine. But then it's followed up by like the penultimate episode and the ultimate episode, which are like mind blowing. Mm-hmm. That Rumpole, the Bailey guy, whatever his name is, playing number two. And then the final episode. There
you
go.
Yes.
The final episode is mind blowing and weird and
fall out.
So cool. And they're just intense and bonkers. Also, if the words Fox Kids Club mean anything to you, then maybe you should revisit Batman, the animated series.
I like that show.
One of the great, possibly the greatest cartoon ever made.
Yes. And I would, for my money, even though I love the 1989 Batman, that's probably the best screen interpretation of Batman. I think it sort of kicks Christopher Nolan in the cowl and leaves him spinning like a top, but in a really meaningful way. And because...
They did it on purpose.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, Kevin Conroy, I think, is probably the best Batman.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. He's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and he does a Bruce Wayne Batman different voices that doesn't make me laugh every time. Unlike Christian Bale, where it's like, you know, exactly. I wonder if he's doing a fake voice. I can't tell!
And because we don't have all of this wonderful show in the catalog, you can supplement your cape crusading with a visit to Gotham City in 1966 via the first season of the Adam West, Burt Ward Batman TV series. This show is the reason why many mainstream news articles about comics still use the words Biff, Pow, and Zap in their headlines. And it could be argued that maybe the show sort of helped further neuter comics a little after, along with the Comics Code. But all for me, all is forgiven now because contemporary film versions of Batman and other superheroes have become so self-serious and brooding that they might as well cut themselves and listen to The Cure. The Batman TV series is colorful and campy and is really worth spending an afternoon into the evening and then into maybe the next morning while you're putting off raking leaves or voting or something else that's not fun. So check those things out and snuggle up with a blanket and
a snuggie.
And forget your cares. Mike?
That would be me. Mike.
I call you Mike.
Short for a bicycle. First of all, disclaimer. This is going to be a lot about my dad, who I'd probably talk about this episode, you know, even if he wasn't a listener. So, hi, Dad.
Hi, nice Dad.
Hi, Dad.
So, way, way back when my parents were together, I remember they each had one room blocked off, like, you know, for their own hobby. So my mom had a sewing room, and my dad had a computer room.
Huh.
Now, granted, I never really got the sewing room much other than to say, hi, Mom, how's it going? And maybe watch TV with her, but...
I was sewing with my mom watching Star Trek.
Now, well, we know Brian is the epitome of masculinity.
Now, on my anniversaries, I go to cons cosplaying as Star Trek characters with my intelligent, beautiful wife. And bingo!
You can sew your own costume. Sorry.
Wow.
Wow. I don't know what that was. Okay. You know, you like sewing your own pocketless jumpsuits.
That was all lies, actually. I don't know how to sew.
Sure you do. So do you.
Yes, you do. That's such a schoolyard trick.
Yes, huh?
It worked.
That's totally great.
Anyway, so my dad would play lots of computer games, and I'd watch him play games because he wouldn't let me play. Because I'm not allowed to. I'm not allowed to touch the PC that he hand built.
The computer
that had, like, you know, 2 meg of RAM. You know, he would.
I don't know what that means.
Me and your dad are gonna have to hang out and build some computers.
Yeah, yeah, you guys could. You know.
Because I do that for real.
Oh, good time.
Don't.
Sure you do. Call back. Hey, he would take my gameplay idea seriously, even though I was a little kid, so most of them were probably lame. But a lot of times he'd get super focused and quiet on the game, so I found that talking wasn't a great idea. You know, I'd be like, hey, Dad, I'm doing stuff at school. Click, 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 click.
You know, hold on, I've got dysentery.
Not that game. He would play D&D games. I would learn that, you know, D&D computer games are really cool. I don't need to talk to people, so that would be awesome. It's like a plus-plus, win-win. Instead, I would look at the spines of all his books around me because it was covered with bookshelves of, like, science fiction novels from the 70s and 60s. And kind of daydream whether about solely based on the author and title. I like to think that that experience, and also my mom's insistence on books over toys at some point, started my bibliomania. Now I have about 3,000, and it's always growing. I always feel happy and comfortable surrounded by books. So I thought today, for the cozy episode, I recommend a few books that I remember from back in the day watching my dad play computer games with its, you know, less than 8 bits of RAM. Or, you know, I remember the Atari, where they give, like, this bestiary with Zork, and I'd get all excited about the monsters that he'd get, but there were no graphics, it was all text-based.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the first book I'm going to talk about is called To Your Scattered Bodies Go by Philip Jose Farmer, the first in the Riverworld series. In Riverworld, every person who's ever lived from the beginning of time, including Neanderthals, to 1983, and they explain that later on, and I'm not going to go on that nerd tangent, is resurrected on the banks of a world-spanning river that, like, you know, goes around in this, like, alien planet. Sir Richard Francis Burton, the Victorian explorer and original translator of The Thousand and One Nights, not the hammy actor/husband Elizabeth Taylor, decides to explore the riverbanks and find out where they are and what's going on. The most vivid memory I have, other than the ending, so I won't spoil it, is that Burton discovers that if you die again on this planet, you're resurrected somewhere else on the river. So he decides to do, instead of walking to another hemisphere on foot, because there are no animals and no horses, is he kills himself a bunch of times in what he calls the Suicide Express, in the hopes of reviving close to the mouth of the river, which is somewhere near the North Pole. It's pretty awesome, especially if you like history and sci-fi like I do. Dad didn't like it because the second book focuses on completely different characters, and, like, the people from the first book and the second book don't beat till the third book, which is kind of lame, but still kind of cool.
Aren't there, like, 40 books? There's, like, a bunch of them,
there's,
right?
About 8 or 9.
Yeah.
It's available both in book form and on Overdrive.
You're only off by 31.
That's fine.
And I also thought I'd talk about one of Terry Pratchett's Discworld books. I already talked about my love of his books, and I was very sad his passing earlier this year. The book I'm going to talk about today is called Moving Pictures. It's available on Overdrive. This is the one that parodies movies and movie culture. And the actual plot is that some alchemists in the Discworld have created a primitive form of motion pictures and have set up on a hill in Ankh-Morpork called Holywood.
Looking like where at?
It's say called the city is called Ankh-Morpork, which is where it's also. And there's a hill there called Holywood.
I wanted Ankh-Morpork. I just wanted to get you to say it again.
Ankh-Morpork?
That's the capital of the Discworld books.
I thought that was what an Irishman said at breakfast.
Looking over the annotated Pratchett file at lspace.org, there are zillions of movie references in this book that I missed because I was 11, including that the a female main character is named Ginger, and everything she does is a reference to Ginger Rogers. the main character apparently is an entire homage to Fred Astaire. They do like a lot of like dancing, apparently. I remember very vividly laughing at the very beginning of the book. And I was sitting in the little rocking chair next to my dad while he's playing games. And I'm like laughing till I cried. And I told him about it. And then we both laughed until we cried over the alchemists decide that the best thing to go with motion pictures is heated corn kernels lathered with butter. And they call them banged grains. Again, I was 11.
They said banged.
Well, instead of popcorn, you see.
Yeah.
They're banged grains.
What? Oh.
See, Jeremy gets it. That's why we're friends.
I already nerd bullied you, so I'm not going to.
What I do now?
Well, I was not gonna. I didn't want to play like a full on. Don't want to bring it down card, but. Oh. That's why I can't stand Terry Pratchett.
Oh.
I just can't get into it. But anyway.
Man, no
because he doesn't use the word.
Listen.
No, because it's not about people cutting themselves and
here's what
character development.
You got to see if you got to figure it like, okay.
It's puns and.
Okay.
You may like the later books, which give up funny stuff in favor of character development, which is why I don't like them.
I would say you can just basically be like, is it fun? If the answer is yes, Brian doesn't like it.
Yeah, I get that vibe.
That's fair.
You know, Star Trek The Next Generation is not fun at all. It's just preachy. It's like Touched by an Angel in Space or something. Like,
what about Data's Day, Touched by an Angel in Space?
Well, Naked Time's kind of fun. I have a couple of thousand books in my boxes. I had a couple thousand books in my boxes in my living room since I moved in. But recently, my last birthday of this year, I decided to turn that room into a library, which is my hobby room. Like, my mom had a sewing room, my dad had a computer room. Aw. I'm about to assemble my 8th bookshelf this weekend, and I hope to get a nice recliner in there after Christmas. I cannot wait for that cozy feeling of being surrounded by my own books and memories of those books.
Are they cataloged? Like, in order? Just, like, randomly?
I cataloged them on Goodreads, like, 7 years ago.
Okay.
Actually, I think it was the other one. But anyway, what you got, Bill? Library thing.
You cozy yet?
Oh, boy. I can't wait to hear about Bill's cozy book, which he's been dropping hints of.
Well... When I want to get cozy,
yes, John Wayne.
I like to read a good thriller, and I just read a good one. It's called Host by Robin Cook. Host deals with Lynn Pierce, a fourth-year medical student at South Carolina's Mason-Dixon University. She thinks she has her life figured out, but when her otherwise healthy boyfriend Carl enters the hospital for routine surgery, her neatly ordered life is thrown into chaos. Thank you, Amazon.com, for that synopsis. Are we cozy yet?
They're cozy.
So, Robin Cook is a physician and a writer of medical thrillers. He is considered to be the father of medical thrillers with his first novel, Coma, back in 1977. With the exception of Sphinx, all his books have been medical thrillers. Robin Cook takes a relevant issue happening in medicine and exploits it into a medical thriller. Issues such as organ donations, genetic engineering, research funding, and organ transplants. Good cozy topics. I was lucky and found Host on our Lucky Day collection. If you're not lucky and you don't want to be on the waiting list, let me recommend other Robin Cook titles, Blind Sight, Coma, Mutation, or Vital Signs. All wonderful titles to get cozy to. And I just looked, just 19 holes for the Host book, but maybe you'll look out on the Lucky Day collection.
I was going to say, sometimes I feel like taking a bath is really cozy, except if you wake up and your kidneys
your
are gone.
Your kidneys are gone, yeah.
I hate when that happens.
That's a drag.
Oh, man.
Bill.
Hey, guys.
Well, why did I forget that?
Absolutely.
I forced you guys to create that for me.
Yeah, you never want to do it.
No.
We do it in Latin.
You get what? Oh, man.
Hey,
I couldn't even read that.
I don't think it's
Caveat emptor.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. Don't bail on me now. I mean, you corrected me and then you stopped.
Hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
What do we do? On Tickle My Fancy.
Well, maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't.
I hope it does.
But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Bill? Well, Tickling My Fancy is our Movies at Main. Come to the library Saturday, November 21st, 2015 at 2 o'clock and to see the movie Crossfire. A man is murdered, apparently by one of a group of soldiers just out of the army. But which one? And why? Crossfire's not stars one, but three Roberts. Robert Ryan, Robert Mitchum, Robert Young. So nice. Please come to the Nashville Public Library November 21st, 2015 at 2 p.m. to see this classic film noir, Crossfire. It's got Robert Mitchum and Robert Ryan. Do I need to say more? I mean,
yeah,
it's got Robert Mitchum, and also it's got Gloria Graham in it. So, come, Crossfire.
Gloria Amanda. Graham measures up.
So, for my fancy tickle, I am going to stick with our mystery theme for today, but I'm going to add to the body count. It's kind of funny. Harry Potter has totally been stalking me lately. First, there was this big marathon on ABC Family. Then I got my illustrated version of the new book release. Then I read Rainbow Rowell's new book, which is basically an original author / fan fiction / original author homage to The Boy Who Lived. I actually just reviewed that on our off-the-shelf blog for those of you who are intrigued by that. It's called Carry On. And now today I'm going to talk about the latest crime thriller from Robert Galbraith. But Amanda, you ask, what does Galbraith have to do with Her Royal Ridingness Rowling? And if you haven't already heard, Rowling caused a slight stir in 2013 by admitting that she is Robert Galbraith.
Spoiler alert. Is that the fourth Robert in 5 minutes?
Yes. Yeah, more Bobs. Bobs in the house.
We're just bobbing along.
My pen just dropped.
Rockin' Robin.
She wanted to write adult mysteries but didn't want Harry to taint her work. The first title is called A Cuckoo's Calling, and then that was followed by the second book, The Silkworm. Now she's back with her third book in the Cormoran Strike series, A Career of Evil. And apparently she needed more cowbell because this time the killer is obsessed with the Blue Oyster Cult.
What? See, when that title was announced, when I got the book and cataloged it, and I was like, Creepy Evil's a Blue Oyster Cult song.
I will not apologize. You're mine for the taking. I'm making a career of evil. I'm making a career of evil. I'm making a career of evil. I'm making a career of evil.
Yeah, so like every chapter starts with a quote from a cult song.
Whoa.
Chapter 5,
I wanted to read it.
Tokyo.
You know, I like the first two books. I think I may love this one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so the killer uses these quotes in his nefarious schemes.
Kick out the James.
Strikes Girl Friday Robin, another Robin in the house, apparently today's name day.
Number 5.
Is in the killer's crosshairs. Will she survive this madman's wicked fantasies? Will their working relationship make it through? I really like this series. I like the characters, except for Robin's stupid fiancé, Matt, but we're not supposed to like him, so that's okay.
I keep expecting him to die or something.
I keep waiting. No, but
she should finally break up with him. Then.
Yeah. So these books are a little spicy. They're not too dark like the Dragon Tattoo books I mentioned during Shocktober, but they are well put together, well thought out, and well developed. I'm a little mad at Rowling/Galbraith because of the ending. I hate it when writers do that. Spoiler alert, there is a little bit of a cliffhanger that we will just have to wait until the next one to see what happens. Dang nabbit.
You know, Boys or Girls, one of my favorite bands, which I haven't been able to mention on here.
Did you ever see that movie, The Stoned Age? It was like a very low-rent Dazed and Confused kind of ripoff. It wasn't, but not really. It was more like a parody of the.
All right.
Blue Oyster Cult plays a prominent role in that because this guy goes to a BOC show,
yeah,
and he sees the laser from the thing gets zapped in his eyes, and he sees this crazy eyeball. And then there's a very funny but not politically correct discussion about whether or not Don't Fear the Reaper is a good song or not. And it's not that great, but I saw it late one night on HBO when I was in high school, and this has always kind of stuck with me.
If you kids want to hear the greatest rock opera ever, listen to Imagine Dose, the band, the CD that only I like and the band is owned.
Imagine Dose?
Yeah.
Jerry's like, that's my take on my
jam. Yeah, that's my jam. Listen to the Magnum Illusion. It'll blow your mind.
Do you want to give us the Terry? Well, that wasn't. It wasn't. I'm so bad. I'm the librarian bad. Mix up.
Michael Moorcock?
Yeah. Okay.
Whoa, what the?
I was going to say Terry Pratchett wrote lyrics for B.O.C., but it was actually Michael Moorcock.
Yeah. Fire of Unknown Origin, about. I believe the CD was called, that he wrote some song for. Oh, man. All right, nerd topic again. on the theme, my theme of earlier, reviving / resurrections / fiction. Yeah. Two things that I thought that had passed on may or may not be returning this week. Oh, boy. When the film review website The Dissolve folded earlier this year, I was heartbroken. I was literally in a funk for a few days. It's not only just a review site, but also like a community devoted, dedicated to film that was like smart but not pretentious. It's funny in a clever way and not in my crappy, low-hanging fruit punny sort of way.
It dissolved.
Wow. Speaking of crappy, low-hanging punny fruit, wow. I feel good. And you're the one who's always like, oh, Mike, you could go for the clever joke, not the obvious pun joke. I'm sorry, Brian.
I haven't said that to you.
You have. What about you've told me that on game night. I don't think they actually
do. You have one for Grantland? What happened to Grantland? Their funding was withdrawn.
But anyway, alas, long-form journalism has no place in the internet. See also Grantland. But this week, or last week for you listeners, some former members of The Dissolve have created a new podcast called The Next Picture Show, which critiques a current film through the lens of a past film. This first week, it's All the President's Men and the current movie Spotlight. Really interesting. I think they're going to do it where it's one episode on one movie and another episode on the other movie. That mostly it was on All the President's Men, which I have unfortunately not seen, even though it sounds like something I would love.
Hey, oh, my word.
Right? Yeah, no, it's just gap in my film knowledge. And lastly, before I go off the rails even more, the creator of one of my favorite television series ever, Joel Hodgson, has a Kickstarter up to create a pilot for a reboot of Mystery Science Theater 3000. They're asking for $2 million. As of this recording, they've got $700,000. And it's been up for a day.
Yeah, they will have no trouble.
They'll have trouble with, you know, they're asking for $2 million, but if they do $5 million, they'll do an entire season.
I saw that last night and didn't read anything about it, but what is the relationship between him and the people who do Riff Tracks? Are they...
They're not doing it. Yeah. So it'll be no Mike Nelson, yeah. Kevin Murphy, or Bill Corbett.
Is there animosity there? Is it just
no,
like,
I think it's just that they've got their own thing going, yeah, and they don't want to, like...
Because you know, that's busy. What they do it just without... characters,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah,
and it's like, great, but
I mean, I don't think there's any animosity towards them. Apparently, the producer of the show, Jim Mallon, who did the voice of Gypsy, okay, like had this big like rivalry. Like Joel left the show because of him.
Oh, okay.
There's some behind the scenes stuff that, you know, we don't need to go into, but I'm excited. I mean, granted, it's a it's funding a pilot of a reboot. So like, you know, I'm hoping that those two words together won't be bad, but you never know. Anyway,
Jeremy, what do you got?
Well, so I spent the last few days sitting on a beach, and I took a mountain of books. I took a shoebox filled with comic books. I read 11 of them. I took a bag filled with books and then like a large stack of pocket paperbacks. And the one that I settled on reading was Aliens vs. Predator, Prey, by the father-daughter team of Steve and Stephanie Perry. I don't believe Steve is the Steve Perry of Journey, but
be awesome if it was.
Be awesome if it was.
Kind of amazing.
I'm almost done with this book, but I read most of it sitting on a beach with my toes in the sand, or I was topless on a couch that was adjacent to in a building that was adjacent to the beach.
Things I don't want to picture. Clippy Erotica, Jeremy without a shirt on.
So this book is from 1994, and I've always had kind of a soft spot for like licensed comics. Like one of the first times I went into like a big comic book store, I saw Star Wars Dark Empire comic from Dark Horse Comics, and I was like, they make Star Wars comics? Oh my God. And then there were Aliens comics, also by Dark Horse, from the 1990s, and I always really enjoyed them, particularly Aliens Earth War, with art by Sam Keith. And then I found this.
That'd be really interesting.
It's pretty. You know, it's early Sam Keith.
Keith's style with Aliens.
Yeah, it's early, so it's not quite. He's not quite gelled. It's like I think it maybe came out in like 89 or 90, maybe.
I think he's my favorite Batman artist, just because of those crazy years.
He's pretty amazing.
And then the cape.
I got this book of his called My Inner Bimbo for like $5 a couple weeks ago. No Batman in that book, but some.
Bimbos.
So this book is from 1994, and I believe it's an adaptation of a comic series. I haven't found that out 100%. But it's about a colony of ranchers on this distant planet, and their livestock gets the alien xenomorph in their bellies because the Yautjes, is that how you say the predators race? Nerds.
I didn't know they had a name for their race.
It's Yautja. I'm just going to say it. Yautjas. I'm just going to say aliens and predators. The predators, the book is like partially from their perspective. And what they do is they have this alien queen on board, and she's laying all these eggs, and then they drop them on this planet, and then they go and hunt them as like a ritual to train these hunters.
A million times better than both of those movies that came out.
See, I never saw either of the Aliens versus Predators.
The first
movies.
One will make you regret your life and all the choices that have led you to this point.
Okay.
And, yeah.
No, it's really cool.
My sister
so
still yells at me for wasting a dollar at the dollar theater for that.
Wow. So they shoot all these eggs onto the planet, and then the little face hugger things get in these like cow like animals that these ranchers are going to ship back to Earth for meat. And then they burst out, and then there's aliens everywhere. And then the predators land, and then they clash with the ranchers. And then one of the predators go rogue, and then their leader is injured. And then there's an unlikely team up between the predator and a human. And it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool book. And it, it's very fast paced and fun. It was a good beach read.
Everything is broken and wrong. Can you correct that?
Your turn.
Super glue?
I jest. 17 was filmed in 1981. I said it was filmed in 1985.
Same decade.
There was a little audio flub at the end. Did you guys hear it?
Nope.
It sounded all right. It sounded like I hit the wrong key on the soundboard. Our fancy soundboard.
There's a lot of keys on that.
I think it's a monster.
Yep. No other corrections?
You're so awesome.
I think I'm good.
I think you guys just forget. For more information, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
Our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week,
what are we thankful for?
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks.
Corrections.
Thanks, I guess. dropped the mic. See, that was a good joke too, and relevant to the cozy genre.
This is the best. Someone has made that cozy joke before.
Of course,
because that's epic.
Okay,
that's nice.
If I ever become a rapper again,
you were a rapper.
Yes, my name is going to be MC Beaton.
Oh, and the thing and the stuff.
So, hey, good job, guys.